This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Do not adjust your sets. We are actually in the same room together for the first time since March 13th, 2020, as we continue to stream live on the ESPN app. You've got us on SiriusXM Channel 371. As Wes pointed out, we have a new affiliate that's jumped on board the Packer and Durham bandwagon. Mm-hmm. My hometown, WSJS Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We appreciate those guys, and hopefully they enjoy their free parking. Robert is here. Otto's back in the Christmas decoration room. We've revamped the basement. Life is good. Chester and Fuller are eyeballing Robert for some more crackers. That's why they're there. They go. Look at Chester. He's just waiting for the next drop. Mm-hmm. But 844-SAY-ACCN-WES is the number for the show.
All right, so if this alliance is created and we get a scheduling agreement between the Atlantic Coast Conference, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12, you're thinking 12 regular season games. By the way, you're probably thinking about 9 conference games, right? I mean, let's be honest, right? The inventory's going to have to be pretty thick in order to drive the revenue.
Yeah, I mean, you need to give some eye candy,
right,
to your television partners.
Correct.
And the way you do that is you enhance your schedule. How do you do that? Well, if you got a tag team partnership with the Big Ten and the Pac-12,
right,
there's some really juicy combinations that you can throw to your television partners.
Okay.
And that is the object of how you generate more revenue.
Right. And those scheduling alliances are with two other leagues. May not necessarily be with your longtime in-state rival. Yeah, I'm talking about Florida, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Georgia, Clemson, South Carolina, and Louisville and Kentucky. Are you okay not having those games? How important are those games? Just saying.
Well, I think, again, yeah, I think you got to look big picture a little bit here, because the Southeastern Conference, with the addition of Oklahoma and Texas, you have to assume that they're not going to stay at 8 conference matchups.
Right.
They're going to have to expand. You expand, you got to kick somebody out. So from that perspective, who do they kick out? And if it turns out the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 can put that combination together, all of a sudden your scheduling gets a little tight. Now, I'll tell you who I would really worry about is the little guy. Because I think the little guy who sits here and says, hey, you know what? I'm an FCS team. I mean, is there a way I can play you for $1 million and lose 54-7? It starts to get pretty tight on the schedule, Wes. How do you handle scheduling? But from this exercise, if you're an ACC fan, and again, the biggest word in sports is if this alliance can get off the ground, just think about the possibilities of who you can play.
Now, that's true. Think about the possibilities, but also think about where these in-state rivalries stand. Clemson's beaten South Carolina 6 straight times. Georgia Tech, I think since 1967, has won less than 20 times against Georgia, right? Louisville and Kentucky, the Cards have won 13 of the last 21. And Florida State, Florida, the Noles have fallen, but they've won 7 of the last 10 against the Gators.
And it doesn't mean these games can't exist.
Correct.
With the alliance. Again, we're just
they can exist. I'm just saying, are they, like, to your point, if you go to 9 league games, which is a possibility, again, creating revenue, are you going to have room? And remember, we're only talking about 4 schools here. That's the other thing. If you have 14 or 15 football-playing schools, not everybody has this situation. So why not go ahead and say, if I'm going to add another league game or whatever the case may be, it might come at the cost for these 4 schools.
Maybe not. Maybe those 4 schools in the ACC with those in-state rivals with the SEC, that stays in play.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, everybody else has one additional game that you could play against the Big Ten or the Pac-12.
Maybe so.
Again, there's so many what-ifs here, right? We're just kind of getting way ahead of the horse a little bit. But I mean, I'm just saying, if this gets off the ground, Wes, how about the possibilities, though, that exist? Because I think fans love these conversations. Man, who would we like to play outside of our footprint? Well, that's kind of what this question is, because if you all of a sudden have a relationship with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, hey, could you imagine? I mean, I mentioned Clemson, Ohio State, which is kind of a natural, but could you imagine Clemson going to Penn State for a whiteout?
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Right? No question.
How about North Carolina playing UCLA in the Rose Bowl?
Well, I mean, you could go 1,000 different directions here.
Right. I mean, how about NC State playing, I don't know, Iowa?
Oh, come on. We can do better than that, can't we?
They played in the Peach Bowl one year.
I understand that.
Yeah.
We can do better than that.
Sure we can.
Send them to Utah.
Utah, send them to Oregon. Wolfpack goes to Oregon.
But look, I mean, listen, Florida State, Oregon, little rematch of the Rose Bowl game that took place the first year of the college football playoff. You know, Miami and Washington had great, great games. In fact, Washington snapped Miami's all-time winning streak there at the Orange Bowl. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios. I mean, can you imagine USC? And I'm talking about the real USC, not the one in Columbia. USC coming across country to play somebody in the ACC.
I mean, yeah.
It would be awesome. I mean, I think fans would enjoy the possibility of Big Ten, Pac-12 combinations coming into their stadium and making the road trip.
And you'd also get to kindle some games like, hey, by the way, Maryland could now play some ACC schools again. Pitt and West Virginia could play each other.
Pitt-Penn State. There's an excuse now.
Rutgers-Syracuse. No more excuses. I mean, you can – there are a lot – there. This is not the wild card geographically that people think it is, okay? Because it's a football-driven product. This is not for everybody. This is not conference expansion. And that makes a big deal here.
Yeah.
You're only talking about driving this through football. You're not talking about – and sure, there'll be some spinoff for basketball and other sports, I'm sure. But the reality of it is you're talking about potentially adding one league game, and that's a potential. That's not a given yet. But you look at the way the three leagues are structured – and here's the good news about this. The three guys we talk about who are at the front of the league, they've all got good, tangible experience to work with to think out of the box because it's what they've done. Especially Klevikoff and Jim Phillips with their connection, and Kevin Warren through the NFL. They know how to make something like this work. That's where the energy, I think, is coming from this.
And I know our mindset is football, right? The whole conversation is football, football, football.
Right.
But look at the basketball scenarios. We've been waiting on Duke, Maryland to play for 100 years since they left the league. That now becomes feasible
sure.
under this scenario.
Sure.
North Carolina, UCLA. I mean, there's so many combinations here that to whet the appetite. Again, as a fan, that's kind of where I'm coming from. It would be awesome. Now, listen, I hope you can keep Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville, Florida, Florida State. I mean, these are in-state games. Those are water cooler games. I talk about water cooler all the time with scheduling. Mm-hmm. You want games that on Monday morning when everybody gets around the water cooler at the office that you get excited to see. Those four ACC-SEC matchups are games that I don't want to go away. Those are games that I think, in my opinion, need to stay with college football. We kind of lost that with expansion. That's the beautiful thing about the Alliance. This doesn't feel like an expansion. It doesn't even feel like a merger. But what it does feel like is a relationship that all of a sudden you get some new blood on your schedule to get fans excited, to get networks excited. And to me, that is a win-win proposition. And if you're one of the three major players in terms of these commissioners, you want the power to say, guess what? When we have a vote, whether it be playoff expansion or anything else, we got some heat. And you know, you bring that to the table, Wes, it's a game changer.
What about the money?
There will be a ton of it, in my opinion.
What about splitting the money, too?
Well, I mean, this is where it gets complicated, right? I mean, if this was so easy, they would have cut the deal. And, hey, here's our announcement. It's going to be complicated.
That's what Adam Rittenberg was talking
right,
about.
Right. The media rights are obviously, there's a lot of zeros. There's a lot of commas. The media rights for the Big Ten, their deal is up in 23. The media rights for the Pac-12, they're up in 24. The ACC's deal goes through 36. So, already you can see no congruency at all. I mean, people are all over the place. And if you're the ACC, you get the long-term deal. But how great would it be if you had that relationship with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to say, hey, look how we have enhanced our football schedules. That's what this is all about. You've heard Jim Phillips talk about this from day one taking over as the commissioner. This is a football story. Football is driving this train down the road. The ACC has always been a great basketball league, mm-hmm. but this is about prioritizing football. How do you make your league better? If you're not going to say Notre Dame, you're not ready yet, fine, cool. You let us know when you're ready. You know what? Do we have to go pick another team? No, we really don't under this deal. But how do you enhance your schedule? You do it by saying, guess what? You got a chance to see Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, SC, Oregon, Washington on people's schedules.
By the way,
that enhances your schedule.
Mark, and I'm not trying to tell Notre Dame what to do here, but if you're Notre Dame, the ACC is going to deliver you basically the framework of your entire schedule. You'll be able to throw a MAC in there occasionally or the Naval Academy behind it, which I know is important to the culture of the university. Mm-hmm. But all the other teams you want to play would be in this alliance,
right,
including the ACC games you have to play through 36.
Right.
So why not come on in?
Well, listen, I've always respected Notre Dame's independence.
Yeah.
And I know people get turned off by it. I understand. I completely understand. Oh, those snobs, why don't they join the league? They don't have to join the league.
Right.
They've never joined a league until last year. I respect that. If their DNA is to stay independent, if you're Jack Swarbrick in Notre Dame, you have every ability to say, hey, we'll pass on that opportunity. Don't call us, we'll call you.
Right.
But if there's a squeeze, again, I keep going back to power and having a chance to make decisions here. If this playoff expansion doesn't go to 12,
mm-hmm,
if we get down to a situation, Wes, that this thing stays at 4, maybe only goes to 6, I think the smaller the number, the tougher it is for Notre Dame. It doesn't mean they can't make the playoff. They've already proven it twice. Once as an independent, once as a member of the ACC. But if that number stays small, man, don't have a hiccup. Because if you're sitting at 11-1, 10-2, you're not getting in. You're not getting in, especially if the Big 12 not part of the mix.
That's right.
The champion of the Pac-12, the Big 10, the ACC, and the SEC will get priority. And if Notre Dame fans don't like that, hey, join a league.
Yeah.
Simple.
All right. More to come on this Monday. Andrea Adelson coming up here in about 15 minutes. On the other side, oh, and calls, please. 844-SAY-ACCN. On the other side, though, a unique ACC Network retrospective. What does Coastal Chaos mean to you? Yes, friends, that's next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We're doing this about the Coastal. Can you guys distort my voice? No, a little bit lower. Nope. Lower.
At the end does sucks.
Low. That's it. Perfect. There we go. All right. Was ready. Let's go.
When you think of Coastal Chaos, basically you have your favorite and you write it down. It's nice and pretty. You put out your rankings. And then by about week 4, you rip it up, you ball it away and just say, I don't know what the is going to happen. And that's Coastal Chaos.
College football again gives you drama.
The Coastal, it's chaos again. We wouldn't have it any other way, would we?
Next up, Charlotte for the ACC Championship.
When you start looking at the number of people who have won the Coastal Championship, and they said it was 7 different people in 7 straight years, you know that there's chaos.
Funny thing happened on the way to the championship.
If Virginia Tech beats North Carolina,
North Carolina next Saturday,
if Virginia Tech gets their shot at Florida State in the ACC championship game.
You already know, babe.
Coastal Chaos was created inadvertently by the Atlantic Coast Conference in the early 2000s when they elected to go divisions with 12 members.
Well, I'm a visual person. It's like, okay, so you've got this team, and then they beat this team, and then this team loses to that team, so then you've got this one that's down here who beat this team, and then somehow that takes us back to here, but they lost to that team, and then this team from over here, they won this game, back to here, and then you subtract that loss, you get to that win. And all of a sudden, you're in the ACC championship game.
Might have been like 2018, 2017, but I remember I legitimately emailed the league office saying, what's your like 9th tier tiebreaker? Because everything was up for grabs at the moment.
Just about every year at some point in October or November, you'll see me staring at my computer with my eyes darting around, wondering, how is this all going to end?
I know who's going to win the Coastal when they show up at the ACC Championship game.
For me, until it's mathematically impossible for your team to make it, you know you're in it.
It's always interesting to see what's happening on the other side as well. Whoever wins that side and whoever wins our side is going to meet up in Charlotte for a great matchup.
Our experts get up there, they don't know what they're talking about. Everybody's always wrong because it's chaos.
Heck, I don't even know who's on that side most of the time. Notre Dame shows up sometimes, you know? Whoever shows up, we just beat them.
In perfect Coastal Division fashion, Notre Dame comes in, wins the regular season in the ACC and then leaves. It is very coastal of you to make it to the championship game, take your ball, go home, and never be seen in the championship game again.
What's a bigger chaos agent than parachuting in for one season of ACC football and finding our way into the title game there? I feel like we lived up to the proud tradition and standards set by the ACC Coastal.
Was Notre Dame in the Coastal? Do we count that or scratch that? Scratch that. Okay.
It's been 8 and 8 years, and I still have not written off the possibility that we're going to end up with a ninth somehow this year.
Who will win the Coastal Division?
I'm planning on Carolina winning the Coastal Division this year.
Georgia Tech.
Cavaliers at UVA.
Virginia Tech will win the Coastal.
Duke University.
The Pitt Panthers will be winning the Coastal this year.
This year is kind of hard to pick. I'm not sure who I'm going to pick yet, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be right.
The Coastal chaos is just part of the fabric of ACC football.
Everyone acts like they don't want it, and yet they can't stop talking about it. And every school, every conference wishes they had a Coastal Division. Coastal chaos is college football, and anybody who denies that is delusional.
Coastal chaos should be the goal. Coastal is a way of life. It's a frame of mind. It's a state of being. It's all in all just a complete and total show. Like, that's what this devolves into. That is the beauty of Coastal chaos.
We just need to expand Coastal chaos to the rest of college football so we see all of these other teams cycling through. That's the problem. We don't need more teams in the playoff. We just need more Coastal chaos in the world.
I think an ACC team that scores more points than an ACC team will win the championship, and they may come from the coast.
That would have been very coastal-like. Just saying.
I thought Roddy Jones deserves an
award,
special accommodation for his efforts.
There.
Government
the boys.
Protected witness.
Yeah,
Is that what that was?
I like that.
Here's our friends at FPI, by the way.
Oh, let's get them involved. They got everybody going 4-4.
No.
FPI?
No, they got Miami. Let's roll the board out here. Here are the Miami 47.3%.
Big number. I think Miami's going to be good too.
Big number.
But that is a big number. And you wonder why I make fun of the FPI. Because I think that's a ridiculously big number.
Carolina 30.1. Virginia Tech 10.5, Pitt 6.5, Virginia 4.6, Georgia Tech and Duke both less than 1% chance.
Now, I like Miami and North Carolina, choose your poison.
Sure.
As the two favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen enough from this division that fake left, go right comes into play, and it comes in play early.
Right.
And it may come in play really early.
Like Friday night in Blacksburg.
Friday night in Blacksburg. Just saying. You know, would it surprise you?
No.
Seriously.
Not at all.
If Virginia Tech beats North Carolina right out of the gate?
If you take September 2nd and October 16th, those are the two dates. Carolina, Virginia Tech, and then on the 16th, you have Pitt enter the fray with Miami and Virginia Tech and Carolina also involved.
Don't sleep on Virginia.
I know.
Just going to tell you. You can give me all these teams you want. We've seen this enough in this division where, like I said, fake left, go right mm-hmm. is in play every Saturday. But I think on the surface here in the middle of August, you would say North Carolina and Miami, or you're going to be the teams to beat
sure.
if you want to get to Charlotte. And according to James Skalski, get beat down by Clemson. Because Skalski's pretty confident in that bit.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't even know who was on the other side, for crying out loud.
Miami at North Carolina, Pitt at Virginia Tech is October 16th. Just saying.
Can we just get to the first week? Can we just get to Tuffy in Raleigh, me and you?
Tuffy
and Raleigh. When they finally kick us out of the basement and allow us to go on the road while everybody else is having fun on these tours.
Yeah.
We get to go to Raleigh.
All right, real quick before we go to break here, and Andrew Adelson coming up, bottom of the hour. Caesars Sportsbook has released their 2021 Heisman Trophy odds. The list is headed by Spencer Rattler of Oklahoma. DJ Uiagalelei is second. Bryce Young of Alabama third. C.J. Stroud of Ohio State four. JT Daniels of Georgia is fifth. Sam Howell, not available in the top five.
They forget about him? Somebody sound asleep at the wheel there in Vegas?
Somebody at Caesars in Clark County, Nevada, not see 68 touchdown passes in 2 years?
I mean, no disrespect to C.J. Stroud. If you said to me today, hey, you can have C.J. Stroud or Sam Howell, come on, man, what are we talking about? You crazy? And C.J. Stroud may have a really nice career. Sam Howell's the deal now.
And look, I'm not going to diminish Bryce Young because apparently it's been reported he's got seven figures of NIL, but he's Alabama's quarterback. Plug and play, right?
Well, it seems that way. Listen, all these guys have talent. Let's get the kickoff. Okay. I'm sick. I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of sick of list. I mean, we have a talking season. We have a list season. I think later today we have the AP preseason top 25.
Does that come out today?
I think that's today. That will mean absolutely positively nothing in terms of what we're going to get here in 2 weeks.
We're going to have people losing their minds over that.
Well, I'll have the traditional AP. I do a show every year on SiriusXM Channel 24 when the top 25 comes out in the AP
top
preseason
10.
Poll with the top 10. Because there will be one team in the top 10 that you will see, and by the end of the year you'll go, man, how did they stink so much?
They go,
where did they go? There's always one. Just seems like it. So,
is that like Texas a couple of years ago?
It's every year there's one that just absolutely you think is going to be good, that by the end of the year they're 7-5 and receiving votes. Getting ready for the Blue Bonnet Bowl. DogEatMyHomework.com Bowl. One of those deals.
Blue.
One of those other 40-some-odd bowls that we have that will appear on ESPN at some point in time. Pair and company.
Hey.
I'm rooting for I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying there's going to be some preseason top 10 team that's going to go 7-5 and play in some ESPN-owned and operated bowl game. And I'm not talking about the playoff. I'm not talking about New Year's Day 6.
I think North Carolina and NC State are both previous, and Georgia Tech, previous Blue Bonnet Bowl champions.
I know Lou Holtz took the Blue Bonnet Bowl. He went down there to Houston.
Dick Crum took Carolina down there, went 11-1 and beat Texas in the Blue Bonnet Bowl.
Hook them.
Yeah.
We're back.
And you know what happened? Old Tar Heels went to Gillies out in Pasadena after the game was over.
If I were a fan, I would have just stayed there and just said, hey, I'm watching on the tube.
Some of you don't know what Gillies was. There's a movie called Urban Cowboy.
Yeah,
just watch
right.
it at your leisure. All right, sit tight. Andrea Adelson next. On the, what an emotional, impassioned ceremony for Bobby Bowden on Saturday. Andrea was there. We'll talk to her about that. Get some scheduling alliance thoughts from her and more as we move through the Monday morning show right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. You got it from the basement. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. We'll get back to your phone calls. Obviously, the Alliance, a big story over the weekend. And, Wes, so was the memorial service for Bobby Bowden.
Absolutely.
And Andrea Adelson now joins us from Florida. She was present at the festivities. Andrea, first of all, good morning. I can only imagine how emotional it was Saturday morning in Tallahassee.
It was so emotional, guys, and I want to show you just what they handed out to everybody who came. We all got these little programs, and this was the back with him and his beloved wife, Anne, and there's a lot of photos in there, and a handwritten letter from Bobby after the family dealt with some tragedy, the death of his grandson and son-in-law several years ago, and the letter was all about his faith and his belief in Christ and his belief system and how they were going to make it through it. And guys, that was the theme of the service. There wasn't a lot of football talk. It was all about his faith and how that guided his life and how that impacted all the people around them, whether it was work done talking about how much that helped him after the death of his own mother when he arrived at Florida State as a freshman, or Derek Brooks talking about it, who has done so much good in his community. Those were some of Bobby Bowden's final words to Derek Brooks, was to continue to keep doing good. Mark Richt talked about that. Mickey Andrews, and of course his children, Terry and Tommy, got up and talked about that as well. So it was a very moving service in that regard, because it was all about his faith and what that meant to so many people around him. And guys, I thought the cherry on top was at the end when they had the marching chiefs come in and play the fight song and do the war chant, and everyone started doing the tomahawk chop at the end. I thought that was a really fitting ending.
Yeah, Andrea, I think the emotions and the passion kind of shown through, especially I thought that there was a lot of stuff that was said, you're right, and not very much of it football-based. But it's also clear, too, that this family was incredibly close, and at the end, they were all closer Terry and Tommy talking about their just one-on-ones with Coach Bowden, just the way the day-to-days went, things like that. I just thought that was really, really appropriate and really meaningful about kind of who they are. Yeah, football might be what they're known for, but it's not what they are.
No doubt. And on Friday, there were a couple of viewings for people to be able to go and pay their respects. And the one that I attended was at the stadium in the lobby of the football facility where Bobby Bowden was lying in repose. And the entire family was there next to him, greeting everybody who came in and introducing themselves and saying thank you for coming to fans and former players, former coaches who came through there. And the overriding sentiment from everybody that I talked to who waited in this line to go in there and to see him was how much he meant to them in their lives. And I'm talking about a lot of fans who didn't know Bobby Bowden, but the impact that they had on them and the legacy that he leaves behind. You know, one fan told me if there was no Bobby Bowden, I can guarantee you there wouldn't be banners hanging up from this stadium. But, you know, most of it was really about what he meant to them. And I heard a really good analogy or a description of what Bobby Bowden meant to people. And a lot of people talk about coaching trees, you know, who ends up leaving a head coach as an assistant to go become a head coach somewhere else. But in Bobby Bowden's case, it's more like a web of influence, a spider web, if you will, because of the way that it grew and branched out to so many different places. So not necessarily a coaching tree, but a web of people that didn't necessarily have to be coaches going on to become a head coach, but were all the people who were touched by him who take a piece of Bobby Bowden with them as they move forward with their lives.
Andrea, you know, we interviewed so many people last week, whether it be on this show or even on the afternoon radio show. And I loved the fact that the testimonies really had nothing to do with football. I mean, football was a vehicle, but it wasn't the message. And I just loved it because I think it was something that maybe all of us should be reminded that, hey, you know, we all have jobs. We go to work. We try to have a positive influence and do our thing. But quite frankly, at the end of the day, it is about faith and family. And whether you're a legendary football coach, a talk show host, a reporter, you work in an insurance company, whatever, at the end of the day, maybe it's just a reminder to all of us, you know what? Take care of the ones that you love, right? Your family, your faith have got to be a priority, regardless of what it is you do.
And that's one message that Terry Bowden delivered. He was talking about the last time he had spoken to his team at ULM before he came home to spend the last days with Bobby with his dad. And he reiterated to that team something that he learned from his father. Make football a priority, but don't make it the priority. It's always been faith, family, and football in the Bowden household, and that's something that continues forward with Terry now as he moves forward with ULM with another head coaching job to have that opportunity to continue forward. And you know, I had the chance to run into Jimbo Fisher before the service started on Saturday. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions about Jimbo's relationship with the Bowden family because of the way things ended for Bobby at the end at Florida State. Jimbo was the head coach in waiting, and Bobby didn't really want to retire, and the boosters were kind of forcing him out, and then Jimbo becomes the head coach, and then Bobby's never around. But that was something that Bobby intended to do. He didn't want to get in the way of Jimbo to have all those comparisons. But Jimbo and the Bowden family remained extremely close, and Jimbo was very emotional talking about that influence that Bobby Bowden and the entire Bowden family had on him, dating back to 1984 when their relationship first started, and how Bobby showed him the way to run a football program, not the X's and O's, but the way to do it in terms of relationship building and faith and family. So it was nice to catch up with Jimbo just because of the way things ended for him in Tallahassee. He rearranged his entire schedule to be able to be there for the Bowden family and for that service. And again, that's just one story among the thousands that are out there for how the Bowden influence and Bobby Bowden's influence has affected people all over the country.
We're going to move to the Alliance here. By the way, I heard that Jimbo Fisher, found out Bobby Bowden subscribed to the Houston Chronicle to read about Texas A&M. I
mean, yes.
He was subscribed to the Houston Chronicle paper so he could get the local news on the Aggies, Pack. There'll be no playing on that internet with Coach Bowden.
No, he was a sharp dude. We're going to miss him. I know that much.
Tell the truth. All right, Andrea, let's move to the news of the weekend. Oh, by the way, this little alliance is been put on the back of a cocktail napkin. We had Adam Rittenberg on in hour one. So what's the latest from your port on this? It looks like we've got some momentum here. And I got to be honest with you. I think I speak for Pack on this. I'm really intrigued by Jim Phillips, Kevin Warren, and George Klevikoff being involved in this. I think it's a stroke of genius if they can pull it off, too.
Well, the new kids on the block have to do something, right, fellas? I don't think any of us expected them to just sit there and stand pat and look at what the SEC did and say, okay, fine. There have to be conversations here. And I think because of where those three leagues are with their television deals, it's not really feasible to sit here and start grabbing teams from other conferences. And I don't think anybody wants that, quite honestly. I don't think anybody wants for there to be a free-for-all. And the folks that I've talked to has said, this is way different than it was 10 years ago when we saw just how much realignment shifted all of these conferences. And that's because of the grant of rights in each of the conferences that we're talking about holding everybody together. So for the ACC, it's Notre Dame or bust. Well, they're not getting Notre Dame as a full-time member right now. So what else can they do? And I think that's why this alliance is so important, because it shows that these three conferences are trying to work together to not only keep their conferences together, but to strengthen the conferences through non-conference scheduling and also potentially voting together. Adam mentioned the playoff, and I think that's a huge component to all of this. But ultimately, the bottom line for me is, what is the value going to be moving forward? Everybody that I've talked to has said, we're not going to do anything unless there's value added. So as they continue with these discussions, and I know that they will, what is going to be the potential financial value for some of these non-conference games? And I heard you guys mentioning Notre Dame and trying to bring them into the table to say, be a part of this alliance. These are all conferences that you've worked with scheduling wise. I had one athletic director tell me we have to continue to be aggressive with Notre Dame. You know, they can't just sit there and say, all right, yeah, they're going to be independent. Let's just give up. No, they want to continue to be aggressive to try and bring them into the mix somehow. So that's why I think it's interesting that they're having these discussions, because not only do they have to, but because this is a way to at least solidify where they are for the time being. As we move forward in this entirely new landscape.
Andrea, I could not agree with you more as far as, hey, let's not just add for the sake of adding, because that doesn't make any sense unless it's Notre Dame. And whether that be for ACC, Big Ten, Pac-12, or anybody else, you're 1,000% right there. But isn't this a cool soap opera, though? I mean, this is about money, power, working together. Again, the SEC's done a great job positioning themselves. So now we're going to watch some other superpowers try to figure this thing out about, hey, can we work together? I think they can. Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit in terms of future games and all that kind of stuff. But it really is the ultimate college soap opera, right? I mean, this is all about positioning and even squeezing, quite frankly, Notre Dame. That, hey, if you want to be independent, you can, but understand the consequences. And I think Notre Dame's completely comfortable in their own skin with this. But from an ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 perspective, not only do you reinforce what you already have, but if you can figure out a way to work together, what they bring to the table is something that everybody's going to have to deal with.
The key, Pack, is what you just mentioned, working together. Because over the last how many years have we seen conferences not work together to be all in it for themselves? So what is it that I'm going to get out of this? How am I going to position myself financially and with TV so that I can be all the way up here and everybody's kind of left behind? And I think once we saw what happened with the SEC, there was this real fear that it was going to be every conference for itself. We even saw that a year ago with COVID. It felt like it was every conference for itself. They talked about working together, but ultimately they did not. So this is a little bit refreshing to me, quite honestly, that there are three conferences that are sitting here talking and trying to figure this out together, as opposed to all of these calls that may be happening behind each other's backs Okay, who should we try and get? Should we try and raid this team from this conference or raid that team from the other conference? The fact that they're sitting down and talking about this, I think it's good for college sports because I don't think anybody wants to see a 32-team super conference that's like a mini NFL and then everybody else. I think people want to see conferences that are competitive with each other. And that has nothing to do with whether the core conferences may end up splitting off. I think that's another conversation entirely. But I don't think it's good for anybody if it's just going to be this very small elite number of schools in one elite conference and then everyone else. So I believe that these conversations and this talk about an alliance means that that's what the other conferences believe. I know the ACC believes that it's important to have strength in numbers. And that's why, for me, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But again, what's going to be the value in adding some of these non-conference games? Because ultimately, that's what matters.
All right, real quick, last thing from me, and I'm going to add that we've got three very new personalities involved in this, too. And you can't get around the fact, and Mark and I were talking about this earlier, you can't get around the fact Jim Phillips is basically 200 days on the job. Kevin Warren's been there about a year and a half, I guess. And George Klevikoff doesn't even have his two-week orientation papers dry yet. I mean, so what are we talking about here? These guys have come in here, and they're starting to deal cards now. And they're playing with, and whatever it matters, they're playing with big television markets. And two of them have got expiring media rights deals too, Andrea. That's got to factor into this to push the timetable forward, I would think.
No question. And the ACC is obviously last if we're talking about the television rights deals. The ACC's doesn't expire till 2036. And I know the Pac-12 and Big Ten are before then, but they're not before the Big 12's expires. And so there is this long period here. And when I say long, I mean more than 5 years, where they have to try and figure out something, because I don't think it's feasible for them to start stealing teams from other conferences because their grant of rights is going a little bit longer than the Big 12's is at this point. And so what this means for 10 years down the road, I don't think anybody knows. But I think in terms of what they have to do right now, given where the SEC is, and that all starts now with the playoff conversation, it makes sense for them to try and figure things out together as opposed to ripping each other apart and having all of this uncertainty take over. Because, you know, one of the worst things about what happened the last time around 10 years ago with realignment was the uncertainty, the untrustworthiness, the backstabbing. I don't think anybody wants to go through that again, at least not the folks that I've talked to and had serious conversations about where does this go moving forward. So that's why I feel like, at least for right now, even though those two conferences have media rights deals that are going to be expiring before the ACC, they have to do something, and working together feels like the best possible option and solution right now.
All right. Good stuff as always. Thank you, Andrea. Be well. See you soon.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again.
All right. You bet. When we come back, in case you missed it, Dave Doran visited with us late last week ahead of an important scrimmage. So we'll talk to the head coach of the Wolfpack in case you missed it. And then a big 9 o'clock hour featuring David Teal. Monday's Packer and Durham continues. And more of your calls, 844-SAY-ACCN. Next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. That includes the dogs, Chester, and of course, Fuller loves Wes Durham.
Buddy Wes is back.
Fuller is so glad that Buddy Wes is back in the studio. Robert's over there still feeding the boys peanut butter crackers.
Yeah, more of that. Good. Can we get some more of that?
And Otto's back in the Christmas room looking for something cold from the refrigerator.
Hey, limited edition Packer and Durham coasters, too.
Don't do that, because Kenny Pickett's going to want some of those, too. And I don't have – that's the last one. It's the last one I got. Poor Kenny Pickett's got – Kenny Pickett's got all of our inventory, apparently. He got the two hats that were left up in Bristol. I mean, we got nothing. But at least you and I are back. That's all I know. We're back in the
right
studio.
Here. Right here we are.
That's it.
Get the two shot here, Laura. Can we get that two shot?
People haven't seen that in that a year and
math.
A half.
Got that new math going.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got that. Dave Doran joined us on Friday's show when I was still in Cartersville. We talked with the head coach of the Wolfpack, kind of starting things out, you know, a week or so into camp. Did he like what he'd seen so far from his football team?
Yeah, it's a very close group of guys, for one. I think that really, the way that they compete against each other like everyone does, but also the way they're cooperating with each other to keep each other safe and help each other get better. And you see offensive players and defensive players talking about, you know, how they're competing against each other, what they can do to be better. You know, if an offensive lineman's tipping when he's showing pass or run, D linemen are telling him. It's a really fun group that way. But, you know, we got a lot of work to do here. We were 21 days from our opening game yesterday, and today we start our two-minute end of game, end of half, which last year we were in. Last year we won five one-possession games, so pretty critical day for us today with the things we're doing here two-minute-wise. Looking forward to just continuing to teach, and it's our last week without classes, so this is kind of, you know, for us as coaches, the best time of year, you know, to work football because there's no distractions.
All right, so you gave me the term in the spring, competitive depth, and it's the first thing I think of when I think of your team is how deep you are and how competitive you are at certain positions. Is there an area where developing that depth is more important than others in the next week or 2 weeks prior to the game week preparation for South Florida?
Not really. I think you just don't know what the injuries are going to be on your roster. You know, I think you could feel really good about a spot, and then all of a sudden you're down to your fourth guy, and we need to continue to develop depth across the roster. I told the team last night, you know, when I feel good as a head coach is when you're looking at your starters and then you look at your backups and there's not much of a difference. Mm-hmm. When you get nervous as a head coach is when there's a major drop-off between one and two and sometimes between one, two, and three. And so, you know, pushing the backups, a lot of our competitions right now aren't just to be starters. It's who's going to travel, who's going to be the next in line. And and that's a really important piece. As you guys know, last year nobody went unscathed, whether it was an injury or a contact trace. And so you had to have competitive depth just to get through the season. And I think it taught our guys a lot about that next man up being ready.
Coach, it's been smoking hot in the Carolinas here this week. and I don't need to tell you that. You know, when you're a head football coach, you get a week in the camp. There always seems to be a point where, you know what, the guys start dragging a little bit. I mean, this is a grind. It's a lot of work. And then you throw in heat, humidity. You know, these guys are in great physical shape, but there's a mental part two of this, isn't there, in terms of, hey, fighting through it when you are tired and finishing a drill. How do you handle that? Do you get a feel that, hey, my team needs, I need to back off the team, or, hey, this is what makes you great, boys, go get it. So how do you handle that balance as a head coach in practice?
You know, I think that's part of the magic of what we get to do. You have to be able to read your team. You have to listen. You can't be hard-headed as a head coach. You have to listen not only to your trainers and your medical staff, but the guys, you know, and pay attention to their body language and their mannerisms. And at the same time, you have to push them. You know, they need to feel that heat and that 12-play drive before they do it in a game. And so you have to simulate the hardest situations you can, but at the same time, the body can only do so much. So, you know, it's a back and forth. You can come off of an off day and push them really hard. If you know you got an off day on the backside of a practice, you can push them really hard. It's those days when you have back-to-back-to-back work where you've got to really be smart as a head coach and, you know, make sure you're still getting that quality competitive repetition out there, but maybe you're not out there for 2 hours. You're out there for an hour and a half or an hour.
Any guys surprise you? I mean, you got young guys. You had a really good spring. I mean, we talk about the competitive depth. I mean, Devin Leary back healthy has got to be huge. But at the same time, I know your depth's important there. You got running backs. I'm just kind of curious now with the way the program's been built, where do the surprises come from for you and your staff? Is it younger guys? Is it a veteran guy going 1 year to the next from an improvement scale?
Yeah, I think it's all over the board. Like, you know, these transfers now that come in, and we didn't have them in spring ball, Corey Durden, I didn't know how good a player he was. I mean, I've seen his film, but you never know because the guy didn't have spring ball last year. He's been a great surprise for us in training camp. And then the flip side of that, like the freshman class, recruiting them through COVID and not ever getting to watch them play in person, you think you know how good a guy might be. But the running back, Demi Sumo, we got from New Jersey, he's been spectacular in training camp. And, you know, that's great. We were hoping he would be, but you just didn't know because you'd never seen him in person do anything. And so there's, you know, both sides of this thing. I think making us stay home for 18 months as recruiters has put us in a situation where a lot of these first practices are, what do we really have in these young men that we didn't get to go watch?
Coach, yeah. your collection of linebackers is I mean, you line up anybody in the country. That's an NC State crew line up with anybody you got. As good as they are, as passionate as they are, and as well as they play together, does that make practice difficult? Because they're so good and they know what's going on. I mean, you know, you do want to get something done on the offensive side, and there is a lot of pride on that offensive side. But, I mean, those linebackers aren't fair, for crying out loud.
Yeah, they're really good players. They're tough. They're very mean-spirited guys. They play the way that you want linebackers to play. And we've been able to build some good depth behind them. You know, we know who our starting three are, but, you know, it's been fun to see Jalen Scott in fall camp. Last year, he was like 265 pounds, and he's down to 230, and he's really playing well. Mm. So it's a fun group, and you're right. It's hard offensively when you're going up against veteran players like that on defense. They're not going to fall for things. They're going to be able to scan and fit right and get off blocks because they're strong. So it makes it very competitive and challenging, and that's a good thing for our offense.
Mean-spirited.
I love that answer. Yeah, they're good football players. They're very mean-spirited. I love when I hear a coach say that about it, guys. But they are. That trio at linebacker for NC State is no joke.
Yep. Drake Thomas, Peyton Wilson, Isaiah Moore, Wolfpack, and Bulls of South Florida. Thursday night, September 2nd, 7:30, right here on ACC.
And we'll be there with Tuffy. Right?
That morning, yes.
So get used to the dogs.
We'll be there that morning.
Get used to the dogs again because we're going to have Tuffy sitting right there with us. Man, I can't wait.
Tuffy going to be in the chair between us? Is that the way you plan it?
If we could get the big boy up on the chair, he can hang out. Listen, live animals, live show.
What could possibly go wrong?
I love it.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Power Hour's next. David Teal coming up at 9:15. But first, do you realize there are road woes? There are some road woes involving the ACC that would help this league turn a corner this year. We'll touch on the numbers next.
Packer and Durham.